Blog Talk Radio.
Well, hello, and welcome to Indie Streak. My name is Rachel Galvin, and as you know, I interview film industry professionals on this show. If you've missed any of the shows, you can go back and listen to the archive. I have over 100 shows for you to listen to. Last week, I interviewed Lydia Hislop about her film Burnout, about a girl who sells pot and has a little problem when marijuana gets legalized and kind of throws her life for a loop, and she has to come up with some unconventional means of finding money. So it was kind of a fun interview. We talked about some of the things that Lydia went through in real life when she moved out to Los Angeles, and it was pretty interesting, to say the least. And the film is really funny. It's called Burnout, and it's a dramatic comedy. So I interviewed her last week, but this week we have Stuart Paul, who is the writer-director of The Lord of Catan, and I believe I have him on the line. Stuart, are you there?
I am. Hey, Rachel.
Great. Hey. Thanks for coming on the show today. We're going to dive
right in.
Yeah,
thanks for having me. Okay.
For those who haven't seen The Lord of Catan, is it Catan or Catan?
Indeed.
That's great, Rachel. Yes, indeed.
I believe it's Catan. I have heard from the German people from whence the game comes that it is indeed Catan. I think whether you pronounce it as Catan or Catan tells a lot about your character. So,
For those who haven't seen it yet, tell us a little bit about the film, first of all. Tell us about the plot.
It's about a husband and wife who decide to play a little friendly game of Settlers of Catan when things get a little out of hand, and it plunges them into an epic struggle for dominance that ultimately leads to a vortex of madness and destruction.
Vortex. I like that.
Yes, vortex.
Yeah, I like your word choice. Is this a real game, Settlers of Catan?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. Check that out.
It's been around for a number of years, and they have a ton of expansions and stuff. And it has its core following. It's kind of this game. It's kind of like Risk meets Pit, where you're like in this semi-feudal pre-industrial society, where you're trying to compete with other people for kind of territorial and economic dominance.
Mm-hmm. Now, are you an RPG guy yourself, or are you not really a gamer?
I'm a gamer. Kind of a casual these days. In terms of, like, mm-hmm. RPGs, like board-based, like Dungeons & Dragons and stuff, I never really got beyond playing, like, Star Trek customizable card game or dice game
mm-hmm.
alone in my room. I play a lot of video games, but this
mm-hmm.
is just kind of a board game that my wife and I just kind of fell in love with.
So tell us a little bit about how you came up with this idea to write this.
I stole it from reality.
Uh-huh.
The characters in the game just play the game, you know, on their iPad. That was a couple reasons I chose that, but one being that's what happened with me and my wife. I came home from a concert, we were playing the game on the iPad, things got a little crazy, as the competition got more and more heated, I realized there was a movie there. And I'd been writing for a number of years and had been itching to get back into directing, but everything that I wrote was like either like some epic supernatural Western, or like I was doing crazy sci-fi stuff. And then I finally was like, oh, wait, here's two characters in a room. I
mm-hmm.
can shoot that.
Yeah. Is that at your house?
No. It ended up being way more complicated than I initially expected, because I just tend to end up like complicating things again and again, and having, you know, getting all these different crazy ideas. And while initially I was like, yeah, two characters in a room, I'll shoot this, fast and dirty. Then I was like, well, wait, two characters in a room. I mean, yeah, the dialogue can carry you through. It can be great. You can shoot, like, My Dinner with Andre. You can shoot, you know, like Woody Allen does it. But I was like, I want to stretch the visual medium as much as I can. And I wanted the visuals and the look and the movement of the story to kind of reflect what was going on with the characters. And that meant that I had some very specific changes in camera equipment and lighting and movement that necessitated a very large space. So an apartment just wouldn't work. And finding the location was pretty difficult. We were looking at some lofts, but ultimately we ended up just finding this weird building that rents out for film shoots and stuff, and it was basically just a giant empty cement room with some windows and a big pool in the middle. And we, the production designer cut the room in half right where the pool was, and then just brought in everything, you know, carpets, and painted the room and brought in the props and everything to make it look like a bedroom and a house. Mm-hmm. And so we just built it from scratch, basically. I mean,
wow.
It was similar to, you know, if you built it on a stage, except on a stage it would have cost about 10 times more. So we found a cheap way to basically build a set.
Wow. And how long did that take? Build out.
The building? It's a good question. I can't remember. I think they did it in about 2 days.
That's not bad.
But it was down to the wire. The production designer was there until, I believe, like 2 or 3 hours before we started shooting.
Wow.
So, yeah, on the first day, like, we started at, like, 5 a.m., and I looked at her, and I was like, oh, I think you win for the least amount of sleep award.
My gosh. How long was the shoot itself?
It was a 4-day shoot.
Okay.
Initially I thought it would just be a 2-day shoot over a weekend, and I was running through my shot list with a DP friend of mine, and he was like, you are going to kill yourself if you try to do this in 2 days. You're going to need 3 or 4 days. And that was very sage advice.
The camera angles and the shots were very interesting. It kind of added to the mood of the scene. Tell us a little bit about the lighting and different things. You mentioned it a little bit, but tell us more details about what you used to achieve some of those shots.
Sure. Technically speaking, for some of the lighting, I can't speak to that because that was the DP's area of expertise, but we talked a lot about exactly what effect I wanted to create. And basically, in the opening of the film, the idea is to kind of lull people into a false sense of security and light it very bright, very rich colors, make it look like a sitcom or like a rom-com that you'd go see. And then and it was like the DP actually, it like hurt him to do this because he likes, you know, doing more moody or crazy stuff. And he was just like telling his crew, he's like, don't worry, it's going to get crazy. Just bear with me. And then like the next scene, you know, there's an abrupt shift that goes instead of this sort of classic Hollywood lighting, then suddenly we're down and dirty, and it's practical lighting that makes it look like a kind of handheld sort of docudrama. Very, very gritty. We changed you know, the resolution we were shooting at and the lens and stuff. And anyway, the entire movie takes place over the course of about 12 hours, so each scene has a different lighting setup. In the next one, it was nighttime, so then we used a lot of practicals and tungsten lighting to give it a nice, rich, yellow, golden feel. And then as the game heats up, we kept increasing the heat, and then when it gets really crazy, we started just bringing in these flashing panels of colored lights to reflect off the actors' faces, and started bringing in mirrors to create false backgrounds and shaking them, and then ultimately just ended up when it was finally like the morning for the characters getting this very kind of calm, moody dawn feeling. So there was a lot of different approaches contained within it.
Yeah. And besides the moodiness of the film, it's very funny. What do you think makes a funny film, you know, work? Is it the timing? Is it the context? What do you think? Was that something that you had planned for? This is going to be a funny film, or did it kind of come out of the drama of it? What do you think?
No, I knew it would be funny. I mean, the script is probably the most important part. You have to have the material there. But the actors then are the most important thing. They have to sell it. So that's, I would say just the script and the actors. That's really the key. And I luckily had two amazing actors that really knew what the hell they were doing and brought hilarious, amazing ideas to it.
And did they do a lot of improv, or were they very close to the script?
Initially, it was all pretty close to the script, but as we got more comfortable with each other and sort of, got into the shoot, there was more improv. Kind of there's that teaser I had up of the two of them screaming Catan and Catan at each other.
Mm-hmm.
That was the end of one of our days, and it was kind of there that personally I felt like we started to gel in terms of them just running wild with it and bringing their own kind of flavor to things. And so there were a number of times, though, where they would come up with some different idea for blocking or action or actually Amy changed a couple lines for the better. One was one of the ending lines of the movie that she really felt strongly about, and we ended up changing it, and it was for the better. And let's see.
Okay. Now, how did you find them, Amy Acker and Fran Kranz? Because they're very accomplished actors in their own right. Were you friends with them, or how did you track them down?
Yeah, that was just luck, pure and simple blind luck. I was looking for a producer to help me with this, and I had one producer already chosen, but I just wanted to make sure I did the due diligence and talked to everybody, and it happened that the management company where I'm represented also represented another filmmaker who does some producing, and he happened to be friends with Fran. And when we were chatting, I hadn't had anyone specific in mind for the male lead. But when he brought up Fran's name, I immediately was like, oh my gosh, he fits perfectly into what I was doing, what I imagined, yeah. And then for Amy, for a long time we didn't have our actress. I think until about a week before we started shooting, we still hadn't cast the actress. And we had met with a casting director and made bunches of lists of stuff and were going through, you know, offering it to different people. And then my wife was like, hey, what about Amy Acker? And I was like, how did this escape us this long? And we talked to Fran, and we just got lucky in that she had some time off and had the ability to do it. And so she just jumped right in.
Mm-hmm. So as a director working with two actors who are quite accomplished, were you hands-on with them, or did you kind of just let them run and kind of develop the characters on their own? How did you approach that as far as being a director?
I definitely, I didn't know what the hell I was doing, working with two actors this good. like we had a rehearsal day, which, proved to me, like, in terms of, the minutia of the characters, character beats and whatnot, like, they knew exactly what they were doing. Actually, out of that rehearsal day, though, that ended up changing the end of one of the scenes, because Fran was like, I wanted the character to end, like, to be messing with the other one and kind of, like, scream at the end. And he was like, I don't know, I feel like he's just a dick if he does that. And we ended up coming up with a kind of a more genuine response for him that ends up ending the scene on a much funnier beat. And so, but basically, I'm very particular just about the visuals, and because some of the shots are very specific, and particularly when you're holding an iPad, it's important to only show the screen if you want to show the screen. So I would definitely, like, annoying to the actors being like, tilt the iPad like a half inch to the left. Nope, a quarter inch back to the right. But then, after the first couple days, though, like I said, we fell into a groove, and then it got just really relaxed and easy, and they brought their own stuff to it, and I would give them bizarre suggestions for direction, like do it like a French aristocrat, or do it like a magician, or a greedy troll, and most of the times those things just ended up getting us, like, great outtakes, but yeah, every once in a while it would spark something, but it was a lot of fun. Yeah.
What do you think was the most challenging part overall of filming?
Of filming itself, it's a good question. You know, I was moving just so ahead so quickly and so just focused that I didn't have that much time to worry about what was being a challenge. I guess everything pretty much went as expected. I mean, for me personally, definitely I think communicating with actors was the most challenging thing for me, just because they are, you know, their tools are their bodies and their emotions. And so when you're working with a camera runs out of batteries, but it doesn't, you know, get tired. Actors, you know, mm-hmm. they have to, there's long days that they have to go through. But there was some special effects that on the last day were pretty stressful, actually. There was a effect that wasn't quite working, and it ended up eating up half our shooting day, and we still had the rest of the scene to shoot, and we had to wrap in like 3 hours. And fortunately, when we came back from lunch, the effect worked, and we were able to move on. It kind of energized us to finish the shoot, but that also was kind of a blessing in disguise, because my intention for that scene had always been to sort of get away too fancy and just get raw with it. And when we ran out of, when we no longer had time, I just went through my shot list and started crossing stuff off, and it, and then by just by necessity, I really had to embrace what my intention was, that I was still like, you know, I was still trying to like, oh, here we can do this shot to show this. And ultimately, I just ended up being like, no, we just have to tell the story. So that was probably the most difficult part of filming. And post-production had its own challenges. Scheduling the cast and crew screening was probably the most difficult thing, just because Fran and Amy were both working on TV shows by that time.
Yeah, and this premiered at the Dances with Films, right?
Yes, yeah, we just had our West Coast premiere there. And the audience had a great reaction, so I'm excited for people to see it.
Now it's going to be Super Geek Film Festival.
Exactly. And they, so, I mean, I'm excited about that, because this is going to be the first time that the kind of core audience for the film is going to get to see it. You know, it's been to some film festivals, but most film festivals are more, you know, the film world, and festivals have certain types of movies they tend to gravitate towards. And just, I just think the subject matter, and obviously Fran and Amy have a large fan base in that community, lend itself to that arena. So I'm really excited for people to see it there.
Yeah, yeah, it should be great. So has it been shown at other festivals as well so far?
Yeah, two others, USA Film Festival in Dallas and the New York Shorts Festival in New York.
Great. Now, this is your first film as a director, but you've also done a lot of screenwriting in the past, and you've had some success, some really good success with that. I know that you had a pilot that you did called Mankind, a retelling of Cain and Abel, which sold to NBC Universal. Tell us a little bit about that process of selling a script and how difficult that is.
Well, that particular project was easier than it generally is, because I was brought in to a production company based on a sample of mine they read, and they were looking for a writer to do a caveman TV show. That was pretty much the only direction I had, and it's extremely rare to have a producer pitch you an idea that sounds interesting. So doing a show, Cavemen, and doing it like legitimately, like we ended up doing it with, the script has no dialogue, basically. It's set 300,000 years ago at the intersection of Neanderthals and Homo sapiens. And so the, and it's about a Neanderthal tribe that ends up killing a sapien tribe for their fire, and one of the a teenage boy from the sapien tribe ends up becoming part of the Neanderthal tribe. And so the Neanderthals all speak in kind of grunts and whatnot, and so their dialogue is nothing more than sort of intentions in brackets, like aggression or supplication. And the sapiens, I put in just a placeholder dialogue of Swahili to sort of hold a place where we would put in like a mother tongue that we would develop, but it wouldn't be subtitled. So again, that's all for context. And what is kind of indicative of the process of selling a script and whatnot is what happened afterwards, which is we got a director on board. We already had a different network interested in doing the script, and they had a bunch of meetings with us. We put up a budget. It was ready to go, and then at the last minute, they said that they just couldn't afford it, and they backed out. So that is something that is very common. And, well, that specifically, it's not that common to go that far down the road and have the network back out. That's pretty strange. But just in terms of getting screwed over in some manner, that's very normal. It ended up, though, that the producers had to deal with NBC, and so that's how that sold. And but that project is now, you know, it's still kicking. Every once in a while, I get a call from the producers who have a new lead to resurrect it. So the producer on that, Lloyd Braun, his production company is called Whale Rock Industries, and it's kind of like perfectly describes him. He's just, yeah, rock solid and doesn't take no for an answer. So I'm sure that eventually we'll see that on the air. That's just one story of many.
Yeah, you also did a film adaptation of the Nye incident, and was that ever filmed? And
no,
I
mean,
went back and forth.
Yeah, I mean, that's the problem with being a working unproduced screenwriter. You know, you can do tons of work, but very little stuff that actually is bought ever makes it all the way down the pipeline to being produced in Hollywood, which is one of the reasons I made The Lord of Catan. But that was, based on a graphic novel by Whitley Strieber, who is big in the UFO abduction community for his accounts of what happened to him. And I got to meet him and went around a UFO conference with him, and that was pretty fun.
Awesome.
And that was that one was going to be a just kind of like a 70s style horror movie, very suspenseful, where you don't show a lot, more in the vein of like Don't Look Now or The Tenant or something. That one I'm less certain that we'll see the light of day than Mankind.
Well, you also did a comic book series, Ides of Blood, that seems to be successful. What happened with that? Tell us about that. It got published.
Yeah, that was a great process. Ides of Blood was initially a screenplay I wrote, and I was meeting with DC's film division, and they loved it and wanted to make it into a comic book and then try to launch a film off of it. And so, yeah, we ended up teaming up with Wildstorm. And it was actually, I mean, the last comic Wildstorm ever published, so much so that the final issue, Wildstorm no longer existed. So it was published with the actual DC logo on it. So now I can actually legitimately tell people, like, it was a DC comic. But that's about the vampires assassinating Julius Caesar. And I loved the process of collaborating with the artist, Christian Duce. We did another bit of work after that together on something that hasn't been published, a samurai comic. But, yeah, that kind of also gave me the directing bug, because when you're writing comics, you're basically describing.
So now your production company, Hamster Valhalla, which I love the name, you're going to be doing more stuff in the future, I'm sure. Are you working on projects right now? Or are you just trying to produce, trying to promote this one?
Yeah, I am working on some other projects, though. Yeah, promoting this one has taken up a goodly amount of my time, but I'm working on shooting some tests right now for a samurai movie that I'm making. We're putting together some rigs, trying to make some like affordable rigs that you would normally see used in big Hollywood movies, but that we can just use ourselves to kind of get some shots that, well, frankly, I've never seen them anywhere before, so that should be a really cool, adrenaline-filled piece.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm working on a couple other things that are still in the script stage. One is a short film version of a feature that I already have completed, and that's a big epic parallel realities action spy sci-fi thing. And it'll be pretty mind-blowing. And then I'm also working on a comedy about AIDS. So I'm all over the place.
And then there's that.
Yeah.
Are you going to direct them, or are you just writing them?
Direct, yeah. Hamster Valhalla is essentially me, so it's just whatever I want to do. And we have, I have a samurai comic that's, it's completed. You know, I have 66 pages, but it ended up, that was a terrible learning experience, just in terms of I had to go through a number of artists and just learned the hard way about the pitfalls of sort of do-it-yourself publishing in the comic space. But I one of these days may resurrect it once I've had enough time to get over the first attempt.
Uh-huh.
But that one's called Bushido 44, and that's a really fun one about an alternate universe where there's a resurgence of the samurai that have conquered the United States.
Right. Why don't you give us your website so that people can check out what you're up to next?
It is hamstervalhalla.com.
Okay, pretty easy. Anything else, like other social networking that you want to put out there? Any other pages for Lord of Town that you want to put out there?
Yeah, I mean, on Facebook, we've got a Hamster Valhalla page. We've got a Lord of Catan page. It's just facebook.com/TheLordOfCatan. Then on Twitter, I'm at Hamster Valhalla. And, there's all kinds of news coming through there.
And you're coming out here for the screening of the film at the Super Geek Film Festival, right?
Yeah, they're screening it Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, and I will be there every day to do a Q&A, and I may bring Lord of Catan resource hexes for anyone who knows the game. So
nice.
If you come out, ask a question, get a resource hex.
Nice. Okay, well, I will see you in person there. And thanks for coming on the show today. We're running out of time, but thanks for coming on, and I will be talking to you soon.
Awesome. Thanks a lot for having me.
All right. Thanks, Stu.
Bye.
Okay, well, that was Stu Paul, and like you said, he's going to be here in the Miami area for the Miami Convention Center at the FSC Super Geek Film Festival, which runs July 3rd through 6th, and he gave you the times he's going to be there, the dates at least. And if you go to, if you just Google FSC Super Geek Film Festival, it'll come up, and you can see the schedule of all of the films that are showing. There are so many films. We have 55 films. Of course, you know that I'm part of the film festival. I'm helping out the director, Kurt Donath, and I get to see all these great films. And there's some great films. I'm very excited. I mean, this is going to be epic. My buddy Lloyd Kaufman's also going to be there. His films, Return to Nukem High, and a couple other of his films are going to be shown. It's going to be a blast. So if you're in the Miami area, you definitely want to come out to the FSC Super Geek Film Festival, which is part of SuperCon. That's what the FSC stands for, Florida SuperCon. And check it out, again, July 3rd through 6th. Okay, guys. I mentioned last week I have a new magazine that came out, Independent Streak Magazine. The June issue is out, and it is up on my website. I got the website to work. Very excited about that. So you can click on it. If you go to the independentstreakmagazine.com, you'll see this little tiny picture of Joan Collins on the cover. You click on that, it pops up big, and then you can use the arrows to go through the pages. It's an e-book, it's a flip book, and you can read all the content. Got a lot of stuff in there. I've got getting a really good response, which I'm happy about. Not only do I have a feature about Joan Collins because she was here in the local area, but also I have a Q&A with Kelly Pantaloni, who was just at the Cannes Film Festival. She's an up-and-coming actress. I also have a spotlight on Julie Kendall, who was in Under the Dome, and she's an up-and-coming actress as well. She's here local. I have information for those of you that are interested in doing a documentary. I interviewed a director in the magazine about using green screen and how I put the documentary together. I have an interview with Vicky Lau, who did The Painter, and she used a lot of special effects, and she also worked on The Walking Dead. I've got all kinds of stuff in there. I've got some celebrity sightings. I have some more stuff from Cannes. I've got an interview with Ted Trent about his film Belleville, and how he took it to his hometown rather than shooting in L.A. and what the benefit of that was. So I've got a lot of advice and different things in the magazine, so please check it out. It's independentstreakmagazine.com. Share it with your friends. I'm working on the July issue now, which is going to be even bigger, and I'm going to have a ton of content in there. You'll notice that I do tend to interview people that have been on this show so that it kind of gives them double coverage, but it also helps to promote this radio show as well. It's kind of a cross-promotional tool. So check that out, and also check out my Facebook site, which is www.facebook.com/IndieStreak, just like this show. It's a little bit shorter, Indie Streak. And please like the page. I put not only stuff about this radio show and about the magazine, but also I put up events not only in Florida but elsewhere as well. So you can check that out. And you'll notice that I interview people on here and in the magazine, not just in Florida where I live, but all over the country. Like, for example, Stu Paul is calling me from Los Angeles. But I have people calling from Illinois, New York, everywhere you can think of, Michigan, England, Israel, all over the place. So if you're a filmmaker and you're listening to the show right now and you'd like to come on the show, please email me. My email address is ravenprods@yahoo.com. That's ravenprods @yahoo.com. Also, I want to give a shout-out to some of my sponsors for the magazine, including the Fort Lauderdale International Film Festival and Gregory von Hausch, also Laura Bulla, Lisa Eva Gold, Don Dubriel, and Tommy O'Brien. They all helped to make the magazine possible. if you're out there and you'd like to be featured in the magazine, you'd like to advertise in the magazine, just email me, again, ravenprods@yahoo.com. And I am looking for ads right now for the July issue. It's very affordable. It's as low as $25. So I'm just trying to get people's names out there and support the independent film community. So that's what it's all about. But that's about it, guys. I will be back next week as usual. As you can see, I'm interviewing a lot of people from the FSC Super Geek Film Festival. So tune in next week and see who I have on board. And I will talk to you then. Same bat channel, same bat time. All right, guys. Thanks so much for tuning in. Bye-bye.